Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. Today is Friday and it is our markets day. We're going to be talking again with Filbert Applebag, and we're going to be talking about the markets and diversity, when it's a good thing, and your finances and your objectives. We'll talk about that and who knows what else. Filbert, how have you been doing the past week?
Pretty good, how about you?
I'm doing okay, I'm hanging in there. Keeping myself busy. And I know you've been busy with music, too, because you do music and you've recorded a new theme song. Which show would that be for?
The Daily Nationalist. I'm not done with it yet, but I'm getting kind of close. Did a lot of work on it just before we started.
Okay. You know, this is only our second show on markets and finance. And, of course, the disclaimer, we are not really giving out financial advice. Sometimes it may sound like that. We're just kind of talking about principles. One principle I want to start on is different people are going to have different objectives, and your objectives depends on your strategy for surviving the imminent collapse of civilization or not. It can depend on your age. It can depend on where you would like to see yourself in X years' time, and your comfort with different risk levels. If you're younger, you know, you can maybe be a little bit more comfortable with taking risks. If you're older, approaching retirement, you don't want to put your whole nest egg into cryptocurrency, for instance.
Right.
And diversity. When is diversity a good thing? If you have a portfolio, it can be a good thing. Now, we do have among our listeners, I would think we'd probably have at least one prepper. Preppers are people who are preparing to personally to make sure that they can personally survive a collapse of our more or less civilization, kind of survive in a Mad Max world. Is that a good definition of a prepper, or am I not doing them justice?
Yeah, no, I think you're pretty close.
And so preppers,
they prepare for the end. I mean, and they can. You know, they argue, or not argue, but everybody has a different opinion on what's going to happen or how we're going to get to the end.
And, you know, you want to be prepared for a variety of scenarios, you know, so who knows what's going to happen. I recorded a show with Eric Stryker that I'll be playing next week, and we do talk somewhat about, you know, the unpredictability of collapses, and use as an example the dismemberment, some people call it collapse, I'd call it the dismemberment of the Soviet Union, and it was unpredicted, and even people who more or less predicted it didn't foresee exactly the way it was going to pan out. So who knows? And you want to be prepared for as much as possible for a variety of events. Preppers, you know, they tend to store food, they tend to or if they're out in a rural area, prepare their own food. They want to be able to guard themselves, and they'll have a stockpile of weapons and ammunition. And they tend to favor precious metals, right?
Yeah, of course. Commodities.
And commodities, tradables, things that you can trade. I remember 20-something years ago, maybe almost 25 years ago by now, back in the 1990s, before there was a whole lot on the internet, I used to listen to shortwave radio, and there was a shortwave station coming out of South Carolina, and it was WWCR, I believe, WWCR were the call letters, and they had commercials. I would listen to it because there was one show that was interesting by a Colonel Bo Greitz, who I think was a running mate of David Duke's in 1988 for the Populist Party.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was a colonel. He had been in Panama, and he was high up in the. Well, if you're a colonel, you're not a general, you're not a flag officer, but I think he was relatively high up in Panama, whatever they call the Latin American Command or something like that. And then he got into the early Patriot movement. But he was somebody who would talk about Jewish power, and it was hard to find. And I was pretty new to it then. I mean, I had a certain amount of exposure, I was only just starting to become aware of the extent of control in the United States. But so I'd listen to a show, and there would be commercials, and I do remember one of the commercials. It went something like this. So you're stockpiling canned food and ammunition in case of, the coming collapse of society. Well, that's a very wise thing to do. But what if you have to flee in the middle of the night? And they were selling gold chains where, you could break off parts of the gold chain and use it as currency. So, but I just always thought, but what if you have to flee in the middle of the night?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, if you do have to flee in the middle of the night, precious metals are good. I mean, you carry like your life savings and, a little satchel.
Yeah, and of course you can have your life savings stolen from you.
Yeah, of course. It's double-edged sword. Hey, another good liquid, at least at the moment, a good liquid resource is diamonds. I mean, they're used for money laundering.
Mm-hmm.
You can move diamonds around really quick.
Right, so... and even a lot of other people who don't take preparations to quite that extent might want.
There's those people that aren't necessarily prepping or preparing for anything, but there's those people that are just simply living off the grid, and that's interesting. I would like to do that. I think anybody would.
I have a friend who does that, and she's not a prepper. She's an environmentalist. But she has a farm and an organic farm, and she does have solar panels.
Probably saves a lot of money too.
And then of course she, I guess she used to be a science teacher, and she has workshops on her farm and teaches about organic farming and sustainable practices. And yeah, and it's funny, there is this overlap between the kind of the. What you might call the right-wing militia-style preppers and the former hippie granola-crunching environmentalists. There is some overlap there. But even people who aren't preparing to flee in the night, it's not necessarily a bad idea to have, maybe a few hundred or a hundred or so silver dollars. To have some silver dollars. I have a little stash somewhere and hidden in part of my house and secret compartment inside of a secret compartment. I've got my little stash of silver just in case I have to flee in the night. But it's not the bulk of my assets by any means. Just a little something. Hopefully enough to get me to the next border. So there's that. But we have... On the other end of the technological spectrum, because precious metals have been used as a store of wealth for millennia, now we have the cryptocurrencies. Do you have any experience with the cryptocurrencies?
No, I do not.
Nor do I. I have been instructed on how to set up a Bitcoin wallet, and it's on my to-do list. It's looking at it right now. It's been sitting up on my to-do list for about the past 6 months. I've got the instructions how to set up the wallet and how to put I do solicit donations on nationalbugle.com occasionally. I get donations, and thank you. You know who you are. And if you know who you are, you're almost the only one. There's only a few people who do. But that's okay. So that's on my to-do list. Some people invest in Bitcoin, and it's been a roller coaster, but if you had gotten some Bitcoin, even the beginning of this year or a year ago, sometime early last year, you would be doing quite well. But it's risky. There's massive volatility there, and Bitcoin's not the only cryptocurrency. So you don't invest in. I don't even know if you can say invest in cryptocurrency. It's so much of it now seems to be speculative.
Yeah, it's not really an investment. It's kind of generally agreed on.
It's pretty much pure speculation, but my...
The IRS just looks at it as an asset. They just consider it as an asset.
Hmm. Well, you know, once it becomes... I mean, it's already used as a medium of exchange, and I think we spoke a few weeks ago. It wasn't specifically a financial broadcast, but on our first podcast together, I think, weren't we talking about the, like, this little Orthodox Jewish office in New York that is facilitating people paying their rent with Bitcoin? Did I bring that up?
Yeah, you were telling me about that. I didn't know about that until you told me.
Yeah, and so the... And I think there are places where it's possible to buy a coffee through Bitcoin. But the thing is, it takes 5 minutes to actually make the Bitcoin transaction, whereas if you paid in cash or credit card, you'd be in and out in 30 seconds. So, you know, but once it becomes more useful as a medium of exchange and more common as a medium of exchange for a variety of things... It becomes as much of a potential asset as an investment as any other currency, you know, a national-backed currency, any fiat currency, for instance, which is pretty much all of our currencies, even if we call them hard currencies. To be a hard currency nowadays basically means you can trade it for dollars without any major restrictions. Does that sound reasonable? And so we get to currencies, and I know you have a particular interest in currencies. Have there been any big developments on the currency markets in the past week?
No, not for me at least.
You feel relatively bearish on the dollar?
Yeah, at least for this year, I have been.
And I've always kind of been permanently bearish on the dollar. I've always felt, and you shouldn't always feel something. You should, you know, if you're looking at markets, your opinions should change over the years. And I do have this bias to being bearish on the dollar. Because why? Because I'm bearish on the prospects of the United States. Now I'm hoping that you know, we as a movement can do something to turn it around. And I am, in a way, I'm more optimistic than I've been in years, and yet, you know, I'm still bearish on the dollar. And one thing is, when your position never changes, and the currency can only go up and down, it means I'm right half the time.
Yeah.
Any currencies that you're bullish on?
I've been looking at the Aussie dollar every now and then. I've been looking to kind of scalp the market in a way on Forex and kind of ride the wave up and down, and it's not as easy as it sounds. But I've been doing that with the Aussie dollar.
Now, why the Aussie?
Well, for one, it's not as quick a mover as the Swiss franc.
Mm-hmm. And there's a bigger economy behind it, a bigger population, bigger economy.
Right. And you can buy units of the Aussie dollar for just 78 cents. So with your dollars, you can buy more units also.
And I've mentioned it before. I always looked at the Australian dollar as kind of a proxy for China. If you're dealing in the currency markets, China has it has restrictions. It's basically pegged to the dollar. What is the yuan going for nowadays?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
I think it's somewhere like around six to the dollar, but I could be wrong. Maybe I should pause for a second. So yeah, I just checked the yuan is 6.48, and it's pegged, so it doesn't move much. It's just going to move a little bit back and forth until the Chinese central bank decides to do otherwise. The Hong Kong dollar is, 7.8. And, yeah, you would think that Hong Kong, being part of China, would use the yuan. But Hong Kong had been, as many people would remember, a British colony. I was there when it was a British colony. And they had their own currency. And you know something? The currencies, I haven't been there for a long time, but in 1980, whatever, when I went there, it wasn't issued by the Central Bank of Hong Kong or anything like that. Actually, there was at least two banks that were issuing the currency. One was the, HSBC, Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, which is a private bank. And the other was Standard and Chartered, another private bank. Private banks were issuing the currency. There was some sort of regulatory authority in Hong Kong. And when Hong Kong reverted to China, it was under this rule that they would have, they would be able to maintain their financial system and their economic system. They would be under Chinese sovereignty, and the Chinese military would be able to go there if they wanted to. But it was, they got to maintain their currency. And their currency, they have a big stock market, and their currency is freely traded. It was always freely traded, even though it doesn't float. It was pegged. But the way they maintain the peg, there's two ways to maintain a peg, and I think it's typically going to be a combination of these two ways. One is through currency controls, so that you might need a license to buy currency if you're in a country that has a pegged currency. And you want to buy dollars, well, you might need a license to buy dollars. You might need a permit to buy dollars. So right. That's one way, which keeps the volume of exchange low. The other way is you have a central bank that all the transactions are going to go through the central bank, and the central bank makes sure it's not buying any more of foreign currencies than it's selling, so that it maintains adequate foreign currency reserves. In the case of Hong Kong, there was so much business going on there that they were able to, if there was downward pressure on the currency, the central monetary authority could purchase the currency, and that would create the demand, and it would balance it out. You can do that as long as there's a certain amount of stability. When there's too much pressure, then that's when they'll repeg it. They'll devalue it, however many percent. So that goes on. If you don't have a peg, then you have a floating currency. And this has been one of the big complaints about China that you've heard from President Trump in particular. It's a currency manipulator. Well, of course it's a currency manipulator. It's a peg. I mean, if you're pegging your currency, you are by definition manipulating it. You are establishing a price for it.
I mean, isn't that what the Federal Reserve does?
Well, see, yeah, the Federal Reserve is the odd creature, because basically, almost every other currency is some are pegging themselves to the dollar, but otherwise, the main currency exchanges are typically between dollar and that currency. You do have what used to be called, and I guess they're still called, crosses. When in my day, the yen Deutschmark would have been the main cross. The Deutschmark was traded. It had more or less the place in the financial system that the euro does now. But so now you'd have euro traded against yen. Or you could have euro traded against Swiss franc, something like that, or yen traded directly against Australian dollars. But in practice, usually you wouldn't have direct trades between yen and Australian dollar. You'd have somebody would take their yen, purchase American dollars, take those American dollars and purchase Australian dollars. And so, yeah, the dollar plays this central role in the financial system, which gives Federal Reserve a lot more power than other central banks would have. Okay, we'll come back right after the break.
know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back to the show. And for this segment, I would like to do the ZioWatch News, the ZioWatch News Roundup. Let's get started right away. The first story from Ynet News. Germany's migrants may have to visit Nazi concentration camps. Germany's Central Council of Jews supports proposal by German Palestinian politician to introduce compulsory visits by migrants to concentration camps in bid to quash perceived rise in anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism remains a sensitive issue in Germany, one of Israel's closest allies, more than 70 years after the end of the Nazi-era Holocaust, in which 6 gazillion Jews were killed. Next story. What from Ynet News? No Jews, no 9/11, says leading U.S. neo-Nazi. Israeli journalists chat with 3 neo-Nazis in the U.S., led by Matthew Heimbach, who blames all America's tribulations on Jews, who he dreams literally every day would leave the country. The 9/11 terror attacks on the World Trade Center would never have occurred if it had not been for Jews, according to Heimbach. As the United States experiences a spike in anti-Semitic incidents, Israeli journalist and former politician Nitzan Horowitz paid a visit to the country where he conducted an interview with Matthew Heimbach, the leader of the Traditionalist Workers' Party, who advocates a vehemently anti-Semitic agenda. Let's go on to the next story.
from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. An in-depth report by Senate Democrat staffers on Russian meddling in elections in the West includes several instances when the initiatives included alliances with anti-Semites. The Congressional Research Service reports that many of the far-right European parties linked to the Kremlin are, quote, anti-establishment and anti-EU, and they often share some combination of extreme nationalism, a commitment to law and order and traditional family values, and anti-immigrant, anti-Semitic, or anti-Islamic sentiments, said the 200-page report released Wednesday by the Democratic staff on the Foreign Relations Committee. The report describes conferences across Europe for the far right as being sponsored by figures and organizations linked to the Kremlin, and notes that an official at Hungary's anti-Semitic Jobbik party was charged with spying for Russia. It also notes that the National Front in France, which has its roots in an anti-Semitic movement, took a loan from a Russian bank believed to have Kremlin ties. Next story, from Press TV. U.S. may have been involved in raids on Russia in Syria. Russia says it detected an American spy aircraft circling in the skies between Russian bases in two Syrian cities during recent drone attacks on the facilities, implying that the United States may have been involved in the raids. In a statement released on Tuesday, the Russian Defense Ministry said 13 drones had targeted the Hmeymim airbase in Latakia province and the naval facility in the port city of Tartus on Saturday. It said Russian forces had repelled the assaults by shooting down 7 of the drones and gaining electronic control over 6 others and safely landing them. It said the drone attacks caused no damage. Next story. Syrian army hits Israeli jet, intercepts missiles near Damascus. This is also from Press TV. Syria's army says its air defense systems have hit an Israeli aircraft and intercepted a number of rockets fired at targets on Syrian soil as the Tel Aviv regime continues its acts of aggression against the Arab country. In a statement carried by state media on Tuesday, the army said that Israeli jets had fired missiles at the Al-Qutaifa area northeast of the capital, Damascus, from inside the Lebanese airspace at 2:40 a.m. And finally, from Press TV, UNHCR, that's the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, says Israel should halt policy of relocating African refugees. The United Nations Refugee Agency has called on Israeli authorities to scrap a new program that forces thousands of African refugees out of the occupied territories. Now, when Press TV, this is an aside, when they refer to the occupied territories, they're talking about all of Israel and not just the West Bank or the Gaza Strip. William Spindler, spokesman for the High Commissioner for Refugees, said in a press briefing on Tuesday in the Swiss city of Geneva that the program was not coherent and has not been implemented in a very transparent manner. We are again appealing to Israel to halt its policy of relocating Eritreans and Sudanese to sub-Saharan Africa, Spindler said. Those places are S-holes, he did not add. And that concludes this edition of Zio Watts News Roundup.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, A visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Welcome back to the show. So we've been talking about currency, cryptocurrency, commodities, precious metals, fleeing in the night. We've been talking about that. We'll now talk about stocks. And you know, one thing about stocks is if there's a financial system collapse, then it's happened before. You lose out big you can lose out big with stocks. And of course, what do you get with stocks? In the old days, you got pieces of paper that you could hold, stock certificates. Nowadays, you don't even get that. So it's just you basically are just getting electrons in an account somewhere. But of course, most people, this is what all their money is in for the most part. You've got if you have a bank account nowadays, it's pretty much just electrons. It's in a spreadsheet somewhere, and that's our financial system. And for a lot of people, if you're not a prepper, you're on the boat, and if the boat sinks, you might not necessarily sink with it, but you're going to be floating around very uncomfortable in a raft, a life raft, waiting. Right?
Yeah. You're completely right.
So, you know, it's certainly not for everybody, and they're a lot more volatile. We've got a stock market that's going up and up and up right now, not as volatile and not as extreme as Bitcoin is, but it's going up and up and up. And here's another thing: if you're young and you've got a reasonable amount of cash already, and you want to take part of it and throw it in the stock market, that's great. If you've got a lot of tolerance to risk and you're not nearing retirement, you might want to take the bulk of your funds and throw them in the stock market. When you're getting older and you're getting close to retirement, and especially if you don't have a whole bunch saved up, you know, it might be tempting to look at the stock market and it's going up and up and up and you want to throw everything in there, but we've had spectacular crashes in the past. And you had, you know, of course 1929, but you had, I think 1987, you certainly had 2008, which was pretty bad, and other countries have had massive crashes. Japan in the 1990, from the start of the year, they had massive crash and still haven't recovered. The Nikkei, the Japanese stock index, is it's over 20,000 now. Well, it was 38,000 in 1990 on New Year's Day. So there you go.
Yeah, they're still going through the deflationary period.
Yeah, they've started going into deflation in the 1990s, and they still, I mean, their interest rates are still rock bottom, and, but, you know, they have an ethnostate. I don't see the Japanese complaining all that much, frankly.
Yeah, very low crime.
Very low crime. It, you know, what little bit of crime they have is largely from South American migrants. Who could have predicted that? So, now, another area that I think is interesting is Russia. And when President Trump was elected, I thought a great move would be to put lots of money into the Russian stock market, because the Russian stock market had been adversely impacted by these sanctions. And I figured Trump was going to end the sanctions. But more than just that, during these period of sanctions, especially since 2014, but there were sanctions before that too. I mean, there were sanctions that were put into place, I think, around 2008 after that short-lived Georgian-Russian border dispute, or, you know, there are these two little breakaway areas from Georgia that have been effective Russian protectorates ever since the Soviet Union broke up, and Georgia tried to reoccupy them, and Russia fought them off. But especially since 2014, since the Victoria Nuland-sponsored coup d'etat in Ukraine, there's been a lot of sanctions on Russia. And what President Putin has done to respond to it, seeing as a lot of products that, you know, consumer products in particular, that used to be purchased from Western Europe, for instance, he embarked on a program of what's known as import substitution. Import substitution was a strategy. It was much used in Latin America in, say, the 1960s, 1970s, not to a great deal of success. The idea was you might have one or two commodities you exported, but rather than importing lots of consumer items, you built your own, even if they were lower quality. And so, if I don't know if you've ever noticed, but you know, different continents often have different standards for things like televisions or radios or whatever. And Brazil has its own standard. Argentina has its own standard. Why? Because import substitution. They did not want to be importing TVs from other countries, and they wanted to build their own.
Yeah. And don't different countries use different voltages too?
Right. So and often that has to do with this strategy of import substitution. The competing theory was export-driven growth. And, you know, a place like Hong Kong was exporting huge amounts, and it was so small it really couldn't manufacture everything for itself, so it imported huge amounts. And they often, when I was in school, often they would point to Japan as export-led growth. But the thing is, Japan was very, very protectionist. It was actually kind of a combination of, you know, exporting all sorts of things, but being protectionist, and so it was kind of a combination of the two. But at any rate, Russia, which under you know, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, under the Soviet Union, they made all their own stuff, and it was shoddy, but they made all their own stuff. After the breakup of the Soviet Union, they basically sold energy and mineral resources, and then they let their consumer goods markets be flooded with items from abroad. These became more difficult to purchase under the sanctions regime, and so Putin really pushed for import substitution, and they started their consumer goods over the past few years have really risen in quality, and the economy actually has benefited from the sanctions. And so I thought, oh, this will be great. The sanctions will be lifted, but, you know, the Russian economy is in stronger shape anyway, and the stock market's going to do really well. Of course, the Russia hoax has hampered that. And so up through around August, you know, these first 8 months of 2017, I was expecting big gains. It was completely stagnant. But with the rising oil prices since middle of last year, in spite of the sanctions, that's been enough that the Russian stock market's going up well. I don't really watch the Russian ruble, but the Russian stock market has been taking off, and it's been doing quite well. I think it's gone up by, you know, 15 or 20% just in the past 5 months or so. So it's on a tear too, and it's on a and it's at the beginning of its tear, whereas the U.S. stock market's probably towards the end of its tear. So, but you never know. And I think in terms of diversity, if you're going to go into stocks, you can get you might have trouble buying stocks in individual companies in Russia. You know, if you want to buy the Yukos Oil Company, you might have trouble doing that. But there's lots and lots of what they call exchange trade, what ETFs, exchange traded funds.
Yeah,
you can buy a whole bunch of, you know, like a basket of Russian stocks, big company stocks or small company stocks. You can get Chinese, you can get South Korean, you can get BRICS, you can get, you know, all sorts of things. And so that's an idea. You can invest in stocks and be internationally diverse. That's one way. Of course, you can have the entire world's exchanges be going up and down at the same time. So there's still risk there.
Absolutely.
Are there any countries that you have your eye on, not just in terms of currency, but just an area where you think there might be good economic growth or good opportunity?
Brazil's doing pretty good. China's still doing pretty good. As far as like investing, no, I don't. But I think they're doing pretty good.
China has been on a tear since the early 1980s, really. And I was thinking, I wanted to learn how to say this in Chinese. That will have to be for a future show. But I was thinking about Deng Xiaoping today, who was the effective Chinese leader in the 1980s into the 1990s. A little, tiny little old man, chain-smoked cigarettes, played a lot of bridge. Little old man, never was the chairman of the party or the president or premier or anything like that. I think he was the vice chairman of the party, but he was the chairman of an important military committee. But he was the kingmaker. He was the effective ruler. Everybody knew he was the ruler, this little old man. And I was thinking, he was pretty much a household name 30 years ago, but I don't know. Are you familiar with the name Deng Xiaoping?
No, I'm not.
And probably most people aren't. But he was this little old man, and I think he was potentially the most important statesman of the 20th century. I think he was certainly the most successful nationalist. Of course, he's in the Communist Party, but really, I mean, I think he was probably the most successful nationalist leader of the 20th century. He took over China in the wake of Mao's death, and there are two policies, two broad policies that transformed China. One was the one-child policy, which people know a lot about. And China had a massive population, and this demographically changed the trajectory of China. And I think their economic success is in no small part due to getting their own population under control. The other policy, and this is what I wanted to learn how to say in Chinese, was black cat, white cat. If it catches mouse, black cat, white cat, if it catches mice, it's a good cat. And that was extremely important, the black cat, white cat policy. What it meant was, we don't care about whether it's socialist or capitalist. We don't care about state sector or private sector. All we care about is pragmatism. What's going to work for us? And you know, China, it opened up its economy, but it also protected its economy. It had all this innovation and entrepreneurialism, and it also had this massive state sector, and they just did, they experimented and just looked for what worked. And they, throughout the 80s and 90s, had consistently double-digit growth in GDP, and still, I think their GDP is around 7% growth every year. And they're the second largest economy on Earth, and before long, they're going to pass up the United States. I'm not sure when the projected date of that happening is. Now, of course, their population's four times as large as ours.
Yeah, and their growth.
But their growth, and you know, if we have 3% growth, that's good. And our population is growing, right? You know, with all this immigration. So, China, if there's anybody who's interested in international diversification, having some sort of slice of China is probably a good idea. Okay, we took a little bit of a dog break. While you were out taking your dog out, I looked up the pronunciation of that saying, Hui Mao Bai Mao Nung Chu Dao Lao Si Chu Zi Hao Mao. And I'm sure I butchered it, but that is black cat, white cat, if it catches mice, it's a good cat. So, there you go. That was all the prep I did while you were gone. So you were about to tell me about a Jew in New York and his monkey.
Well, kind of. And I'm not positive he's Jewish, but his last name's Cohen. So maybe a coincidence, but yeah. Anyway, yeah, there's a lawyer in New York City that for the past, well, a few years at least, he's been trying to get chimpanzees and monkeys to have human rights legally.
Well, I really like monkeys and chimpanzees, and especially orangutans.
Yeah, I'm all for animal rights. Yeah,
animal rights, but I don't know if they should vote. I'm not sure.
No, I mean, they're definitely not humans.
No, they're not humans. Now, anybody who's been to my YouTube channel knows I use this picture of a monkey. And part of the reason I use that is the same reason I use your music for bumper music, and I use the North Korean music and other things. I want to avoid copyright issues. And there's no copyright issue with that monkey because that was a selfie. The monkey took it himself. Now, the owner of the camera, who had set out the camera with the intention of having the monkey take selfies or take pictures, he took that great picture. It was extremely popular, and he was making some money off it. And so this lawyer, I don't know if he was a Jewish lawyer or not, but sued on behalf of the monkey, saying, wait a minute, the owner of a photographic copyright is the person who took the picture, and it was the monkey who took the picture. And there's this protracted legal battle. It completely ruined the photographer's life. You know, he lost the case. bankrupted him. I don't know if he got divorced. Like, it's really sad. And that, actually, I'd started using the picture even before this case came up, just because it was such a funny picture. And I almost feel guilty about it now because of that poor guy. I could send him a piece of the money that people donate to me, but that's not going to get him out of bankruptcy. So I do solicit funds, and if you want to go to nationalbugle.org and click nationalbugle.com and click on the donate button, I do appreciate the money. Even little bits of money make a big psychological difference. At this point, I am not sending a piece to the photographer. The monkey gets to keep it all. Okay, let's take a break, and we'll be back for just the last segment.
All right.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Okay, we are back, and in these last few minutes, as we speak, the Dow Jones, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ are all at record levels. And so far this year, we're only at the 12th of January, but there have been almost on a daily basis records in these indexes, and there was 70, 80 record finishes last year. So it's at record levels, and Trump's taking credit for it, and he does actually get a lot of credit for it. But how long can it last? And if he's taking credit for the bull market, and the rug gets pulled out from under him, what does that do to him politically? I have always thought that he was playing nice to Wall Street, to the Jews on Wall Street, because I think he's kind of playing a divide-and-conquer strategy. If not a divide-and-conquer strategy against Jews, he's at least trying to mollify some of them, the ones on Wall Street and the ones who are super pro-Israel, while he pursues this immigration agenda, which is very much very central to the Jewish project. And also goes after the media, which is very central to the Jewish project. And so far, he's—I don't know if he's getting away with it. He is mollifying the Wall Street Jews, and he's attacking the Jews in the media. But the question becomes, for the point of this show, is can this continue? I mean, what goes up must come down, but not necessarily immediately. The economy, in many ways, seems to be doing well. All the indicators are that it's doing well. And as long as it's doing well, does the market remain high? Does it continue to go high? Nobody knows. And Filbert, I think your guess is as good as anyone else's. What are your feelings on it?
I think eventually we're going to go through a deflationary period. I have no idea when. If I did, I'd be making lots of money off of it then and now.
What you had in Japan was there had been low interest rates from, I guess, 1986 or the end of 85. There was a meeting in the Plaza Hotel in New York between the Japanese, American, German, or West German, French, and British finance ministers, and they all agreed to lower their interest rates and bolster the dollar, or bolster their own currency. I actually can't quite remember. I guess they were bolstering the dollar, but lower their interest rates. That was for sure. And this led to high asset prices in Japan. And then you had a new Bank of Japan chief come in. His name was Mieno. He started raising interest rates in order to stop asset inflation. He was trying to, stop this the bubbles, pop the bubbles. Some people say he raised interest rates too fast, and the bubbles weren't simply squished, but they just kind of like completely imploded. So it's hard to know. And we do know that under Janet Yellen, the Federal Reserve was slightly raising interest rates. Nothing like what happened in Japan, but they were slightly raising interest rates. And there are expectations for maybe 3, maybe 4, maybe 2 interest rates hikes this year. Who knows? But it was, this implosion that led to the deflation. You mentioned deflation, and it was this... With all the asset prices going down, you have deflation of asset prices. It wound up leading to deflation of prices in general. And that could happen. If that happens, then you want to be invested in bonds. But I guess that would be subject for another episode. Filbert, would you be willing to come back next week and talk more?
Yeah, I will be here.
Okay, well, maybe we'll do some prep on...
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
This is RBN, The Republic Broadcasting Network.